fell into darkness, a call rang out across the land.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the champions of political professional wrestling, the American Adversaries.
All right, we're here, folks. That's right, we're not out on the ocean like some of our American Adversaries listeners and Army who are on their way probably back now, I guess, from the Bahamas on their, let's see, what, four-night, three-day cruise. That's right. Anyway, we're here. We're in for another three-hour Sunday evening classic tour with the American Adversaries live on FM 105.5 and AM 660 The Answer. And we're not on the ship, but we are on the mercury-free studio atop the Salem Media Group studio complex here in bustling Central Florida. Welcome to the show. And once again, this is the mercury-free broadcasting studio. Don't forget, for the very best in general dentistry, health-centered dentistry, and from an award-winning dentist, get your mercury-free dentistry done by my dentist, Dr. James E. Hardy. And you can do that by calling his office at 407-678-3399. Renee will take good care of you, and she'll get you an appointment, and pronto, if you need one, pronto. Speaking of pronto, we want to get to the show, pronto. Then Jeff Sinis is on the bridge tonight.
How you doing?
Getting ready to depart on his own cruise tomorrow night, and please tell our audience why, Jeff, if you don't mind.
Yeah, it's a 40th wedding anniversary, my folks, so love you, Mom and Dad.
All right, that's cool. That's really cool.
Why wasn't I invited?
Yeah, right. And, of course, you can give us a call at any time during the next 3 hours at 407-774-8255, and we will be doing our traditional Who Said That contest tonight, so you'll want to keep that phone close by for that very reason. And Carl Jackson is going to call in with his corner. In the meantime, in the studio with me is Aubrey Khan.
That's right.
What's your shirt say there? You're awesome. You're a Khan. Huh? What does it say? I can't read it all. Of course I'm awesome. I'm a con. Con!
There you go.
No,
modesty is one of my strong points.
Yeah, by the way, Wrath of Khan was by far the best Star Trek movie, in my opinion. I don't know. But
it was a remaking of Herman Melville's Moby Dick, actually.
Yeah.
Only William Shatner was the well.
That's right. That's right.
But he's lost weight since.
And it's interesting because I've been calling Donald Trump Moby Dick. And so we'll be talking about that. Of course, we were at the summit. That other voice you just heard is Hagen Aral himself, and that would be Lucas Paris.
El Periscopio is here.
And tell folks once again how they can take advantage of El Periscopio.
You're going to go to YouTube.com and in their search bar type in Adversaries TV. That's one word. You will find our channel. Click on it. Newest videos are at the top. Older ones are in descending order. So come to Periscope Depth with the American Adversaries.
There you go. All right. So we are all lined up. Oh, by the way, Sunny, our California glow girl, will be back with us tonight. And she just celebrated a birthday this past week. So we'll have to help her celebrate.
So did
sort
my
of
wife.
Yeah, well, we can sing happy birthday to both the beautiful ladies. All right. In the meantime, as we were preparing for the show the other night at the summit, and by the way, I just want we'll be talking more about the summit, but I just want to say I'm as proud as a peacock of everything that the American Adversaries Army represented at the summit. We were there in force. Aubrey was there all day Friday, and Lucas was there all day each day, and we had Kathy Santo Massino there. My brother was there Friday, Roger, and we also had, of course, Rachel Cohen and her friend Cynthia Grace. And we really, and then Carl Jackson showed up with Mickey Alvarez. And I tell you what, we were styling and profiling. And I think we made an impression
of sorts.
Let's just say they were probably talking about us in the press pool as they were on the way to the airport or, loading up for their flights. Real quickly, we had, of course, press access. We had press passes. No one got individual one-on-one interviews, with the exception of one of the guys on Radio Row happened to snag an interview with Rick Santorum, because he and Jim Gilmore actually ventured out into the hallways where the people were. None of the other candidates did that. They were whisked in and out of rooms, and went through the back hallways to get from one room to another. And if you didn't see them on stage, either in the main hall room or in the press conference room, which we had access to, and I'll tell you about that, then you didn't see them at all. So the event was well organized and well orchestrated, and no one other than the first day when you had to go initially to get in because of the security. There was some waiting to initially get in, but other than that, everything went off really smoothly. So compliments to the organizers of the Republican Party of Florida and others who organized the event, and all the volunteers who were there. And they had a ton of volunteers, and they were very helpful. And we did have access to the press conferences, and we did take advantage of that. And we'll be talking about these experiences during the week. But suffice it to say, as I said, our presence was felt and known. And evidently, when I got home yesterday afternoon, I was pretty well worn out. I mean, we did a lot of walking, and it's a big facility.
Oh, that was huge.
Right, and the door to get into the main hall was on the opposite side of the ballroom where they had Radio Row. Now, Radio Row was in the main hall. I mean, it was a perfect place because it was great exposure. As people came in, as they left, you walked right by Radio Row. You could not avoid it, unless you went out one of the back doors. But the ballroom is interesting because it was actually located in the center of the building, and so there was like a big horseshoe hall that would go around it. And we had to go clear on the other side of the horseshoe to go into the main ballroom to be able to see the speakers. And then immediately across the hall from that, catty corner across back in the back corner, was the press rooms. They had one where they held the press conferences, and then next door to that they had it's the room where they file their reports. And they have a couple of TV monitors set up in there so that the reporters can actually just sit in there the whole time if they want and watch the speakers on stage. And then if they feel like it, they can just scurry next door to catch the press conferences. We try to catch them as much live as possible. And then we would go across the hall to the press conference room. And, of course, that's where it can get more interesting. And what would you say in the room? The first day, obviously, it was much more crowded.
Yes, that was definitely the busiest of the day. And I'm going to move those out of the way. That's too much of a temptation. yes, Friday was definitely the craziest of the days because that was Ben Carson, Donald Trump. We had Chris Christie there. The big ones were there.
Right. And, by the way, Donald Trump canceled his news conference because there was, there was some speculation because this, as we were preparing to do the show, let me back up a minute. As we were preparing to do the show, my brother came up to the table and told us that there was a terrorist attack going on in Paris and that the French president had to be evacuated, and it was looking pretty bad. His wife had actually called him because she caught the reports on CNN or something like that.
Yeah.
So he alerted us. Aubrey Kahn went immediately to his faithful laptop computer here, a little flip-top thing, and did a magnificent job of keeping us up to date as the story was developing over the next 2 hours. Well, evidently, Donald Trump got the word about the same time, too. And they have buildings. They have a hotel, big old hotel over there in Paris. And so he canceled his news conference to, in essence, take care of business. Which I thought, when you look at it from that
aspect, makes sense.
Yeah. And that's what you would want a leader to do, whether that leader is of your organization or perhaps of your country. You might not want your leader to go out and say, play golf or play cards upstairs in the White House.
Who would you want answering the red phone at 3 a.m.?
Yeah,
right?
And so But as I said, in the press conference rooms, that's where it could get a little bit interesting. Now, Marco Rubio spoke that morning, and we'll speak a little bit later about the actual stump speeches that these guys gave, because I was a little bit surprised with a couple of them. But the press conference for Marco Rubio was my first. Right. And so, it takes a little bit of a learning process. But we were sitting in the second row, and I was trying to get a question answered. But I will say this, too, with Marco Rubio, he didn't choose who the questioners would be. He had two handlers doing that, one on each side of him. And so they were choosing who. So it looked to me like they had kind of already decided who they were going to have ask some questions. And they went immediately to Carl Cameron, the National Fox guy. They hit the Telemundo folks. They hit some print folks. And then he was done. And as he was walking off the stage, we had that contest Thursday, and we had that question. And so I stood up, and with a loud voice, I wouldn't say shouting out, but with a I projected, let's just say that, would you indict Hillary Clinton if this administration doesn't? And he kind of reaches up and kind of tugs at his coat a little bit. That's a little bit of a body language there. I'm going to cover myself. It's kind of a shielding move, right? And then, but we did detect, Kathy and I detected a bit of a Cheshire Cat grin, just kind of creep into his lip there, as he was walking sideways to us. And then when he turned to walk behind the curtain, I followed up with, "She's clearly broken the law." So
it was quite a learning curve.
Yeah. And now I think I talked about that on the show Friday, but what I didn't talk about was what happened in the Ben Carson press conference press conferences that followed up the next day. And that would have been yesterday, and capped it off with we did Rick Santorum, we did Bobby Jindal, Rand Paul, and John Kasich. And we have to take a break, but we'll pick it up again on the other side. We'll give you the latest out of the Paris and what France is doing. In the meantime, please don't go away, because you are listening to the American Adversaries 3-hour classic Sunday evening tour. And pretty soon, if not already, if someone has an AM radio on that ship, they might be listening to us live. Aloha, hey! Okay, welcome back to the show, folks. Once again, we're just the start of a lot of live radio on Sunday night. Of course, you have Armed American Radio. We'll take you live from 8 to 11, but we're going to take you up till 8 o'clock. And we're talking about the summit yesterday, or in the day before. And real quickly, I'll sort of run through the... I'll run through them real quick, and I'm sure we'll be bringing these up, especially I want to brag on it when we get to Mike McBath back on the air. And by the way, tomorrow is the Pizza Eating Challenge. We'll be talking about that in a little while, too. That's right, the eve of the challenge. The pressers the next day, as I said, they started out with Rick Santorum, then it was Bobby Jindal, then it was Rand Paul, and then ended up with John Kasich. And I asked them all the same question that I asked Ben Carson the night before. As soon as our show was over, I ran around to catch, I was hoping to catch at least part of the Ben Carson press conference, ended up catching it all. Actually had to wait about 15 minutes, which was fine with me. But the rest of the people had been in there a while. But Carl was in there. We were in there in force. Let's just put it that way. Carl and Mickey Alvarez were in there. As was, I was in there with my brother. They were sitting together as a pair. I was sitting there with my brother as a pair. And then across the aisle was the three amigoettes, the three senoritas, I should say, the three senoritas, right? We had Cindy Grace, Rachel Cohen, and Kathy Santomasino side by side.
Oh, my.
Okay. Talking about trouble, baby. TROUBLE with capital letters. But anyway, all of us. I was so proud when I was driving home Friday night, because we all got in a question to Dr. Carson, and it was strange because with all of the other candidates, there was a bit more clamor amongst the journalists to get a question in. With Dr. Carson, it was kind of subdued, almost like they were, I don't want to say afraid, but reluctant in some fashion to ask him a question.
And we're waiting for you.
Well, maybe that's what it was. And so about the third one in, and I figure out one of the tricks is try to get centrally located up close so they're kind of looking right at you no matter what, and make eye contact as much as you can. And don't sit there with an angry look on your face, I guess. But anyway, he points to me, and I asked the same version of the question that I asked the next day, which was, and this was, of course, in lieu of most of the questions he had gotten up to this point. Well, all of them had been about France because it was a developing story. And I asked him, I said, Donald Trump has said that he would take the 200,000 or so refugees and migrants that this administration is going to let in from that region and send them back. Would you? And he began to answer, which is what they all said, a various version of this. I would not allow them in the first place. And he began to elaborate on that. And I said, well, what about the ones this administration is going to let in? And he said, well, let me finish my answer. You know how he talks, yeah. Right? Very patient with me, if you will. And he went on to say, well, I think Congress should stand up to this president and not allow it. And then I kind of interrupted him again, and I said, this Congress? Like, this Congress is going to stand up to this president? And he said, well, we need to make sure that this Congress stands up to this president, was ultimately his answer. And lo and behold, today, it has turned into one of the bigger issues surrounding this attack.
Yeah, it's actually become quite big. It's all over the place.
And then, as a matter of fact, it turns out, as I said, I asked various variations of the question the next day. And when I asked it to Rand Paul, I said, given your stance on domestic surveillance, do you think that we're doing enough to surveil these people who are already here? And Donald Trump has said he would kick the 200,000 out if this administration is going to let in. Would you? And the first thing he said was, no, I do not think we're doing enough to, you know, track these people. And then he went on to give his answer, which was, once again, pretty much a variation of what they all said. I wouldn't let them in the first place. How do we know who they are? There's no way to check them. None of this. And then they all, at the end of the day, though, never said that they would send any that Obama lets in out.
Of course not.
That answer ended up on Fox last night. Kathy, as I was beginning to say a while ago, calls me up at 11:30 to tell me that she had just seen his answer on Fox. Not local Fox. Big deal Fox. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it wasn't important that they showed the question or heard, you know, but the important part was that I elicited that answer. And when I got to John Kasich, he was the last one now, right? So my variation of the question to him was this. This past week in Iowa, Donald Trump said, quote unquote, I'm going to bomb the shucks out of ISIS, mm-hmm. But I didn't say shucks. Didn't I say the word, Lucas? Did I say the word?
Mm-hmm.
I said the word. And then
poo-poo.
And then I said, also, and he's also said he would send the 200,000 out, you know, would you? And it was a serious question. There was I wasn't trying to be funny or anything. And as a matter of fact, I was kind of giving him an opening because he has been the one who's been most vociferous and against Trump, right? So I laid it out there. And he pretty much said the same thing. But he also said something that I thought actually was, and all of the other candidates were asked by one of the other reporters, what would you be doing right now if you were president? And be honest with you, I thought he gave one of the best answers. He said he would urge France to call for the enforcement of Article 5 of the NATO Treaty. And Article 5 is common what do they call it? It basically is an attack against one NATO country is an attack against all NATO countries. They have the clause has actually got a title to it, common defense or something like that, I think it is called. And in that sense, it would be a declaration, in essence, of war against the Islamic State and call for all of the NATO countries. It would be a ready-made coalition. And it would call for all of the NATO countries to step up to the fight, step up to the plate. So if you were looking for a response that was probably the most, I thought, if you would talk about it in the sense of recognizing what we're going to have to do. Now, we never got to interview Lindsey Graham, and he was gone before the event happened. But in giving the stump speeches, I tell you what, that guy understands the threat. He was talking about stuff like this going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And lo and behold, that very same night, it happened. Now, the problem with Lindsey Graham is his delivery style is it doesn't match the threat. Now, I suppose he's trying to sound overly calm so as not to try to sound or not to be seen as sounding hyperbolic or out, you know, lunatic or something like that. He's trying to, you know, he's delivering it in such a low key approach. But when you're delivering it at a whisper, I mean, it just kind of doesn't fit the severity of the threat.
Right.
And so he's not being heard. And that's another thing when you speak at a whisper. It's hard for people to hear you. And lo and behold, when he spoke the other day, it was lunchtime, I grant you that. But when those stomachs called, it was loud.
They were gone.
It sounded louder than Lindsey Graham's warnings.
And they all left.
Exactly.
Well, France has retaliated.
And what have they done?
They have dropped 20 bombs on an ISIS training camp.
You mean they didn't fly planes over with 20 bombs and come back with 15 or 16? They actually delivered them.
They delivered them. They did what they said they were going to do. 10 fighter jets pummeled ISIS-held city of Raqqa in Syria with at least 20 bombs, according to the French Defense Ministry. What was it they hit? The jets hit command and control center, jihadi recruitment center, munitions depot, and a training camp.
Yeah, I guess they didn't have too much trouble figuring out where those places were, huh?
Well, they didn't ask our president.
Yeah, because he sort of seems to be lost over there. He sends the planes out and they come back because they say that there's no targets that they can find.
Right, meanwhile you've got these convoys of trucks in plain sight, but they couldn't find them.
And command control with the drone technology we have, you couple that with satellite technology, there ain't nothing in that country that hasn't been pinpointed down to a trash basket on the corner of Central and Main in downtown Damascus.
Exactly. I mean, they can tell you what kind of pen you got in your pocket.
You got it. And there's no way you can't tell me that we don't have the intelligence to know where to hit these people and hit them hard, and that's what France is showing us. And that's what the president should be doing tonight, too. We should be following suit, hammering them. What was it again that Donald Trump said? Bombing the shucks out of them?
The SH-1T.
Yes, the SH-1T right on out of them, baby. You know it. And that's what we've got to ramp it up to do. And another thing Trump, by the way, I was going to mention this later in the show, may as well talk about it now. Another thing that Trump said he would do would be to take away their source of revenue, which is, it ain't charitable donations, it's
the oil.
Oil, exactly.
Yeah, he said he was going to bomb the oil fields and obliterate them and then bring on ExxonMobil into there, rebuild it, put a wall around it and keep it for ourselves.
Listen, a lot of people say, oh, how are you going to do that? These things are dilapidated anyway. They're basically ancient technology, and it would be a great way to upgrade them, right? And you would take the source of revenue. Well, lo and behold, article appears in the paper this past week. Pentagon announces that they're going to up their airstrikes around the oil fields and try to disrupt the flow of illegal oil from the oil wells to the black market because it is funding the Islamic State. Fighters! Imagine that. Donald Trump is not qualified to be president, but already in a couple of instances we see here where his suggestions are now being done in the theater of action.
But, you know, if we bomb the SH-1T out of the oil fields, our illustrious Muslim-loving president will send them financial aid.
Well,
because that's who he is. He has a heart of compassion towards terrorists.
In a way, right now, he's already doing that.
I mean, he's moving to increase and accelerate the admission of Syrian refugees into the United States. And he doesn't give a crap whether there's ISIS terrorists there or not.
And he's doing that because he understands that if he doesn't get them in and get them in quick, they ain't going to get in here.
And he wants to have terrorists here to create havoc after he has left office.
Imagine that. Imagine that. What a guy, huh?
See, I defended the country.
Tough guy!
All right, welcome back to the show, folks. That's right, you got the American Adversaries, and we're going to be here live until 8 o'clock. 407-774-8255 is the number. Christopher Hart here, along with Aubrey Kahn, who also now hosts his Talk with an Expert show.
Talk to the Experts.
Talk to the Expert show.
Oh, precisely.
Every Saturday afternoon live at 1 p.m. And it's a great time because that's when a lot of people are working on their house and stuff. And you got, if you're working on something and you got a question, call the guys up.
Yeah. We had one of our new experts on yesterday. Yeah. And he's an expert in solar heating. Solar electricity,
panels, yeah,
and all of that.
Did he have an opinion, by the way, on that these amendments that are going to be on the ballot next year?
We didn't discuss those. This was his first appearance on the show.
Didn't want to scare him away.
Tread lightly.
All right. Talking about treading lightly but leaving a big footprint, that'd be our very own Herr General Lucas Paris, who has the scope up and running again tonight. Tell him about it, please, sir.
Go to YouTube.com, type in Adversaries TV, one word. You will find our channel. Click on it. Our newest couple of installments are already up for the first half hour. And going down from there are older episodes.
Now, people can subscribe. Now, can they also do stuff like us or put us on, you know, spread the video around somehow?
Oh, yeah, as long as they, this might be getting a little technical. One of the things you can do on your Facebook is actually go and grab URLs from YouTube and then post our videos that are on this channel up on their Facebook page.
It's just cut and paste.
Cut and paste.
That's just that easy if you know what you're doing.
Don't call and ask Chris.
I could do a clinic on this. The general will teach you.
I have a very poor reputation around here when it comes to gadgetry. Goes back to my college days. Me and computers just do not see eye to eye. Anyway, the situation in France, the French obviously get it. Francois Hollande. I wouldn't be surprised. I would bet that there are, let's just say, diplomatic scurrying around between the U.S. diplomats and the French diplomats. Oh, no. Not Article 5. You don't want to go there yet. Not Article 5. You see, no.
Not until Obama's left office.
Yeah, you can do it then. You see, and then that'd be fine then, but not yet. We can't have Article 5. You see, that's too much. That's too drastic of a step up. And I'm pretty sure that that's what's going on behind the scenes we speak tonight.
You can bet that the Obama administration is trying to get them to backpedal.
But
they have closed the border for 3 months.
Well, they should close it permanently. Maybe they will think about it now. See, and once again, goes back to something Trump has been saying. If you do not have a border, you do not have a country. And if these people can come and go at will, then there is no real France.
Well, one of the terrorists was saved from drowning on a boat that was capsizing.
Imagine that.
And this is how grateful he is.
Well, but this is the lesson in this. You know, if we have a chance later, I'm going to read from my Quran. See, my Quran, this is a Quran right there. Everybody should have one of these books. Because you no, I'm serious. So that you can read passages like this in it. Passages that's from chapter 47 entitled Muhammad. Can you get that?
I don't know if I could get it fully on here. This thing's not that much HD.
Okay, and it's a bit hard to read because it's thin paper and it's translated, and you got it both in Arabic writing, I suppose that's Arabic, and
so what does Mo have to say?
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, those who disbelieve...
Beneficent and Merciful.
Yeah, right. Those who disbelieve and turn from Allah's way, he will destroy their works.
The apostates.
People wonder why they tear down things and burn things, and why they destroyed buildings like the Twin Towers.
Because Muhammad said so.
Those who disbelieve and turn from Allah's way, he will destroy their works. And those who believe and do good and believe in that which has been revealed to Muhammad, and it is the truth from their Lord, he will remove their evil from them and improve their condition. In other words, if you believe in this bull crap, it will remove evil from you. So in other words, if you believe this nonsense, you aren't the evil one. Do you understand this?
Well, you know, Satan can do these things.
And then after it tells you that if you believe in this nonsense that you're not the evil one, it goes on to explain. That is because those who disbelieve follow falsehood, and those who believe follow the truth from their Lord. Thus does Allah set forth their description for them. Then it gives you the prescription of what to do for the disbelievers. So when you meet in battle, these who disbelieve, smite the necks. Then when you have overcome them, make them prisoners, and afterwards either set them free as a favor or for ransom until they lay down their burdens. That's what Muhammad says, you see. And now this...
Because his God is so merciful.
Right. And this president, even after all of this, as you pointed out in that statement the other day, which on the surface of it, it sounded pretty good, which I said, you pointed out that nowhere in there did he even at all mention the source of this terrorism. Right.
He refuses to.
Right. And he still refuses to. And this was brought up at the Democratic, which brings us to the Democratic debate last night. Because I will say this for John Dickerson, and I did not see the debate, I must say. I watched football and fell asleep. And evidently other people were watching the debate and fell asleep. No, I was just so tired. There were some excellent football games on last night, some close ones going on too. Baylor and somebody and Oklahomans, I don't know. Anyway, LSU got beat. The debate, evidently John Dickerson brought this up. You know, that are you going to be willing now to define the enemy here? And as a matter of fact, pretty much bluntly, asked Hillary Clinton, is this Islamic terrorism or not? And her response was, well, we're not at war with Islam. Well, she didn't laugh, but we're not at war with Islam. We're not at war with Muslims. These are jihadists. And so she was trying to, walk this sort of fine line again, where they're not, this isn't really Islam. And perhaps she's never read, and by the way, I guess I should have identified where I was reading this from, in the Quran. I was just reading from chapter 47, verses 1 through 8. Chapter 47 being entitled Muhammad. And perhaps she should refer to the good book here, the good book in terms of, understanding
good
Islam.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And by the way, when I die, I'm going to be cremated, and I'm going to have this doggone thing burned with me if I don't burn it before then. It's better used educating oneself than for energy, okay? But it is far better used to educate oneself with. I'm not recommending anyone in any way, shape, or form should go out and buy one of these to burn it. They should buy one of these to educate themselves.
And then burn it.
Well... Okay. And then, by the way, you can get them at Barnes & Noble or any of the major book outlets, can you not?
You can pretty much find a Quran, a Bible, or a Talmud anywhere. And all of them are tax-free.
And all of them in the same section of the store as well. And, by the way, I got mine's at Barnes & Noble. So, and they have several that you can choose from. But don't buy the Islam for Dummies because it will make you only dumber. You have to go to the true source and read it for yourself and see what it says. And by the way, that's some of the milder stuff in there. Mm-hmm. And so it bears worth noting that none of the Democrats last night really would identify the enemy, although I will say this for Martin O'Malley. He actually bucked up and said, we need to take the lead on this and should consider the use of Article 5. And he actually sounded much more hawkish than the so-called tough, who would you want to answer the phone in the midnight, Hillary Clinton, right?
Yeah, but he knows he doesn't have a chance in hell of getting anywhere.
Yeah, but
So he can afford to tell the truth.
Well, exactly, and I was going to say, I got a feeling that that's the way he really feels about it.
Yeah.
You know, this was the guy who actually made the police take a tougher stance in Baltimore and lowered the crime rate in the process. And now he's part of the blame. He's taking part of the blame because he did that. And but Hillary Clinton was just a big prevaricator. Her low moment of the night was when she was the most angry. She was actually angry and forceful, and there wasn't the smile or the cackle or anything, was when she was questioned about, and Bernie Sanders challenged her somewhat on her being such a darling of Wall Street and a protector of Wall Street. Oh, she lit into them and said, well, I was here on 9/11 and Wall Street was the focus of the attack on 9/11 and I saw the carnage and I had to help them rebuild and I was there to help rebuild it. And you better not go after Wall Street. They're my buddies.
Yeah.
And you better not mess with them. Yeah. You know what's good for you.
My cattle futures.
Yeah. They're my buddies and we'll take care of you. Yeah, Wall Street's my friend.
Oh, Bernie doesn't have a chance in hell either.
Get it. You better not go away, please, because we'll be right back.
Trust me.
Yeah, trust us. We're not doctors. We have it going on, unlike the Democrat debate last night, which was terminated 7 minutes early because it was so boring. Can you believe that? Boring Democrat debate?
No.
Nah.
There was
Hillary and her two doughboys.
And even though it was on CBS, of course, it was on Saturday night. And I tell you what, they probably actually got a bit of a boost, unfortunately, because of the terrorist act. Because, you know, Saturday night debate, when you got college football on, you got TV going on, you got people going out to movies and doing stuff that they normally do on the weekends, which is why you don't do stuff like that on the weekends. And at first I thought it was a mistake because Hillary does do normally pretty well in debates, but
it's done on purpose.
Last night it revealed their weaknesses.
Debbie was a man, Schultz.
Yeah.
Yeah. She made sure that Hillary's going to be the nominee.
Yeah. Well, the debate last night revealed that she's got a huge weakness, and it was supposed to be her strength, and that is foreign policy. In the meantime, let's go to our man Carl Jackson, who's on the line with us right now, fresh off the summit himself. And Carl, how was it up there on top of the summit, sir?
Oh man, it was excellent. That was a fun time. I didn't get to spend as much time as you guys did out there, but I got to tell you, that was a great time. If we're speaking of the same summit,
yeah, well,
pretty interesting.
Yeah,
Chris was a pro. I gotta toot his horn. That guy gave me confidence to be in the press room.
Well,
he sounded like a pro in there.
Well, I was telling the folks earlier, you know, about the press conferences starting. You know, we had the Carson one that Friday night, and then the others is Saturday. And that Friday night one was the one I was the proudest of us all because the whole team was in there pretty much.
Right, sure.
And we all got separate questions in. And I got mine in, then Rachel got hers in. Rachel's question had to do with Israel and what would Ben Carson do to reassure Israel. And that she said, I love Rachel because she's like us, Carl. She sees things from different perspectives.
Sure.
And she took that statement by Barack Obama that he would, you know, that he recognizes Israel's right to protect itself as saying, you're on your own,
right,
buddy. And,
right,
and she asked him that question in that fashion. And I thought he gave an excellent answer. You know, they would not be on their own.
Great question. That was a great question.
And then you followed it up with a grand slam as he was going out the door. One similar in the fashion when I shot the question at Rubio as he was heading off stage. Carl did the same thing to Dr. Carson. Tell him what happened, Carl.
Yeah, basically, I got to tell you the truth. Chris gave me, I had to follow his lead. I was a nervous wreck in there. I hadn't been in that position before, and Chris and Rachel Cohen led off with some great questions, and I was like, man, I got to get mine in, but I was so nervous. I could hardly remember what to ask. And then he was walking off the stage. I heard them say one more question, and I started panicking and sweating. I was like, oh, my God, I can't believe I'm letting this opportunity pass me by. And so I decided to out-shout the guy that was shouting in front of me, and I said, Dr. Carson, what are you going to do about the spoiled brats in the University of Missouri and Ithaca and Yale? And I forget exactly how I posed the question.
What would your response to be? And he went on to answer. First of all, he said he would encourage the administration, you know, to take a stronger stance. Well, go ahead. And do you remember the answer?
Chris, I don't. I got to tell you, I'm almost embarrassed to say it, but I'm just being honest. I was so shocked that he turned around to answer the question, I almost did not hear a word except the last couple of words.
And
so I was sitting there thinking, oh, my God, he's actually answering.
When he turned to answer you, the room fell dead silent. And he spoke and he answered Carl from right there. And there was no microphone. When they come up, they walk up to a podium and they answer you through. So everybody can hear. You don't necessarily hear the question, but you can definitely hear the answer. Well, he was already away from the podium on his way out the door. And when Carl said the question, and you know, as you said, it was just, you projected it. It wasn't yelling, but you projected it out. And he turned and he answered you directly. And he did that, what he does with his hands. He puts his hands together there, and he gave his a quiet, solid answer, a reassuring answer that he would not be wanting to set this sort of example. He thinks it's wrong for our colleges and institutions to set this sort of example, and he would have hoped that the administration would have been tougher in their stance and not so quick to give in. And pretty much that was it. And but hey, it was a very thoughtful answer. I thought it was an excellent question.
You know, I appreciate that, and I think Chris, you and I both agreed that this man had more presence than I'd imagine, and you as well. I went in to listen to his speech, and the guy was excellent. I mean, I've seen clips on the news, and I've heard audio bites just like everyone else. But listening to him live, the guy really, I see why people love him.
Yeah.
There's a presence about him when he walked into the room. I hate that I missed Donald Trump because I expected to feel that presence as well.
Yeah.
I can tell you, though, I didn't feel it with anyone else or the other presidential candidates that I did see come into the press room. I felt it with Dr. Carson. And I mean, the guy just seems real, genuine, well thought out. Do I agree with him on everything? No, I really think his position on the border needs to be strengthened. But I think that'll come with time. He is a guy that's thinking things through. But I think this attack in Paris, quite frankly, has to up the ante of everyone. Everyone has to take a Trump position and be totally specific when it comes to the border. I don't think you can mess around, secure the border. A fence built has to be number one before you say anything else at this point.
Well,
I just saw on Drudge that the Michigan governor is now saying he's not gonna be friendly towards accepting more Syrians into the state of Michigan. And I'm like, well, Yeah. I'm sorry that it took that, but, you know, it's about time, quite frankly.
And they have, of course, already a large population of Muslims, not necessarily from Syria, but from various parts of Africa, including Iraq, and probably a few from Syria. One quick comment on Dr. Carson, and then I want you to tell us about, you did actually get to see Ted Cruz across town. Carson, when he walked in the room, it's a presence. That was the word that popped into my mind, and when Carl said it the next day, I just kind of like got goosebumps, because he's the kind of guy that walks into any room, people are going to notice him. It's I don't want to say there's a glow about him, but there's just something about him.
It's weird. It's weird. Yeah. I hate to sound like a numbskull, but it's hard to explain except to say that he had it. You know, as you said the other night when we were talking, it was an it factor. Whatever that it is, he has it.
He definitely does. And my brother said, when he saw Trump speak on stage, and of course Trump didn't give a presser. And by the way, they announced that it was because of the terrorist attack and the fact that they have Trump properties in Paris. So he was going to go back and sort of take care of business and make sure his properties and his people were okay. But my brother said the same thing about Trump. He said as soon as he walked on the stage, he just looked like he was in charge. That he actually gave a pretty specific plan of his own. Perhaps it was because across town, Ted Cruz did what?
Yeah, Ted Cruz laid out a point-by-point specific plan in three parts on securing the border. I know we won't have time to go through all of it before the break.
Well,
here,
if you'll stay through the break, we can pick it up on the other side.
Absolutely, but this is why I think it is brilliant, and I got to be honest with you, I feel like he's Trump, because he broke it down in three parts. Now, he doesn't have the personality as Trump, so I'm sure he's hoping that people will read the plan that he's put up on the website now, but it's broken down into three parts. The first part is securing the border, the second part is restoring the rule of law, and the third part is reform legal immigration to protect Americans. And I got to tell you, when I go through this breakdown, you'll see almost that restoring the rule of law. This is something that I've wondered about. Okay, this president has been a despot, and he has just circumvented the Constitution, usurped the power of the Congress, and obviously they gave him some of the power. So I can't completely say that, unfortunately. But he definitely has circumvented the Constitution as much as possible. And so you have to ask yourself, okay, how is it that a president has totally destroyed the rule of law, totally destroyed the Constitution? How are we going to get that back? We got a 50% of Americans, or voting Americans, that are down with this president virtually, and they could care less about the rule of law because they haven't read the Constitution, and they probably think it's evil anyway. So this is why the breakdown is important. So let me start with what he starts with, and that's the section that he calls securing the border. He says the first thing that he's going to do is build a wall. He spoke specifically on the fact that there's no need for new legislation, only a backbone, essentially. We already know that there was legislation in 2006 when the Republicans said they were going to build a wall, and they passed the bill and all this kind of stuff. He was like, there's already legislation there. They built 36 miles of the fence. They didn't build the additional 64 miles that's needed. And he said, I will build the rest of that wall. I will build the wall. And he said, you have my word on it. I will not, you know, whatever. He just made a strong statement, I will build the wall. Secondly, under the secure the border section, he says he's going to triple the number of Border Patrol agents. Trump is saying that as well. And then he's also said he's going to increase the vital aerial surveillance and other technology along the border. Now, I got to tell you, there's some presidential candidates out there that are mentioning just this part of securing the border. And to me, it's trivial without a fence. None of this stuff works without a fence. All of this should be just a bonus, basically, after a fence is built. And so that's what I appreciate about this, because it's broken down into sections, and then that section is build a wall, and then increase vital surveillance. He also talks about he's going to finish the biometric tracking system at our nation's ports of entry. So this is all under secure the border. You guys let me know how much time I have before I go into point.
You got about another minute and a half for this segment.
Okay. So for the next segment, he said he's going to restore the rule of law. So he first speaks off. He first speaks on about the fact that this has been a president that that hasn't been accountable, that has broken the law, and we need a president that's going to take the rule of law seriously. He's going to do that. He's going to restore the rule of law. The first thing he says under the section, part two, if you will, of restoring the rule of law is he's going to end all of President Obama's illegal amnesty or executive orders, every single one he said he's going to end. He's going to increase deportations and end catch and release. He just says our laws are not being enforced, and he says I will restore our commitment to enforcement, public safety, and the rule of law by rededicating DHS to fully enforcing the law, including through deportations and returns. He spoke very strongly against he's going to end sanctuary city policies. Sanctuary cities will get no federal funding. He said that is going to end. There's too many. There's 340 sanctuary jurisdictions in the United States, and he said that will stop day one, the day he's president. He said he's also going to prohibit illegal immigrants from receiving financial benefits and strengthen E-Verify. This was very important to me. He says American taxpayers should not be funding benefits for those who are here illegally, and American jobs should not go to those who are here illegally. And yeah, he goes on further, and we'll continue after the break. I'm going to hear the music back there.
And by the way, that's contrary to something that Marty O'Malley said last night. We'll be right back. Don't go away. You're listening to the American Adversaries Sunday Evening Live 3-hour tour as the ship is...
A call rang out across the land. Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the champions of political professional wrestling, the American Adversaries.
All right, welcome back to the show, folks. As darkness closes in, we still got a lot of great live radio. We're shining the light bright on the truth so it can be revealed to you listeners out there. All right, welcome to the show. Once again, thanks for listening to the American Adversaries 3-hour Sunday Evening Classic Tour as we come to you live on FM 105.5 and AM 660. The Answer, 407-774-8255 is still the phone number. Aubrey Kahn is in the studio with me this evening, now afternoon, now evening, wearing his Of Course I'm Awesome, I'm a Kahn shirt. Kahn!
And prove me wrong.
Genetically altered. And speaking of genetically altered, because he has this thing on his head that actually takes pictures, that would be Herr General Lucas Perez.
El General of Borg.
El General of Borg. There you go. And then Jeff Sinis is on the bridge. So sit back for the ride for the next couple of hours as our ship is literally coming in this evening from the Bahamas. All right, but we are fresh off the summit ourselves, including Carl Jackson, who met up with Ted Cruz the other day, and he was just telling us about Ted Cruz's plan. You know, and he definitely has gone into more specifics than Trump has. He's going kind of in the same direction. Did he at all address sending back the illegals that are already here? Is Carl still with us?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead there, Carl. I'm sorry.
Okay, I'm sorry here. Yeah, so the last step that Ted Cruz said, and I got to tell you, this was more enticing to me only after building a wall than anything else. And this is when he said he would reform legal immigration. Whenever I hear reform legal immigration, I always get nervous. I don't know what these politicians mean. I'm like, okay, so they're going to figure out another way, a backdoor way, to amnesty a bunch of illegal foreigners. Okay, so he broke it down specifically, and I love this. I mean, the guy just hit it out of the park. He said first he's going to suspend the issuance of all H-1B visas for 180 days for 6 months to complete a comprehensive investigation and audit of pervasive allegations of abuse of the program, He's going to initiate an immediate 90-day investigation and an audit of the H-1B visa program itself and enact fundamental reforms of this program to ensure that it protects American workers. This is where it gets even better. He says he's going to halt any A-N-Y, quote, increases in legal immigration as long as the American unemployment number remains high. He will halt all legal immigration. The purpose of legal immigration should be to grow the economy, not to displace American workers, he says. Under no circumstances should legal immigration levels be adjusted upwards so long as workforce participation rates remain below historical averages.
Well,
that made me sing. And he's got two more things that are even better than that. Did the guy get very specific? Go ahead, Chris.
Well, I was going to say, he just lost the support of Silicon Valley, the executives over at Disney.
he just lost them and gained a whole bunch of Latinos like Jorge Bonilla for the Media Research Center that says this is what he wanted to hear, and a bunch of his Latino friends wanted to hear. So it is quite possible, but the people like the people with LIFA, this is music to their ears. And so he may have lost some, but I would say he probably gained a lot more.
And most of this he would be able to do without congressional action, if not all of it, pretty much. But did he, once again, did he address the illegals that are already here and what he would do about them?
Yeah, I actually, that's a good question. That's a good question, because he did on the stage, but I can't specifically remember what he said, to be honest with you, because at that point I was trying to get backstage. And I got to say, a lot of the policies here, let me do this, because I got to be honest with you, with the policies that he's outlined, I think he's counting on self-deportation, to be honest with you. And he did speak about it, but at that time when he was mentioning that, I can tell you I was trying to work my way backstage after getting kicked out one time. And
did you try and do something like Chris?
Yeah, well, he's...
Our reputations precede us.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I didn't get to hear all of his stuff because I wanted to make sure that I got to see him. But you did get back there.
You did finally get back there. Real quickly, tell everybody what happened back there.
Well, they kicked me out again, to be honest. But what they did was eventually they said they would allow him to speak to people on the stage. And while everybody was speaking to him, I actually snuck up to his wife. There was only a couple of people around her, and I started asking her questions. They were very cautious of the questions that I was asking, and understandably so. But once they saw my questions were somewhat friendly, they let me ask her a couple of questions, and then I proceeded to sneak around people, if you will, on the stage. I got to him, and I got to be the first person to ask him a question on stage. And I asked the question specifically upon regulation as it pertains to the EPA and regulatory tyranny. And the guy, I can't remember all of his answer, but he gave a very in-depth answer of the departments that he wants to end and what he wants to do specifically with the EPA. And I got to tell you, I forget a lot of this stuff. We are going to post it on Facebook, on Carl Jackson, facebook.com/Carl Jackson Radio, because there were a lot of other pressers around me, and they were asking such vitriolic questions. It was crazy. But I do want to share this, too, really quick, Chris, because I think a lot of this speaks to self-deportation. I think that's where he's trying to go, to be honest with you. Because he also said he's going to do this. He's going to enforce what's called the public charge doctrine. And I wasn't familiar with that, although I am familiar with the meaning once I started reading what that means.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, current law requires legal immigrants to certify that they will be economically self-sufficient.
Right.
And he says go ahead, I'm sorry.
I was going to say, Aubrey had to go through that, right?
Right, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, but anyway, you're going to finish.
Okay, so he says the Cruz administration will ensure they do not receive government assistance which defies the law and harms American taxpayers.
Yeah.
So they're going to have to be economically self-sufficient, saying or whatsoever. And he says he's going to completely end this nonsense of birthright citizenship, He says birthright citizenship was not intended to legalize the children of people who are breaking the law by entering and staying in the country illegally. I will take steps to pass legislation or a constitutional amendment to end it. And I got to be honest with you, when I read all of this stuff, the first thing that came to mind was this is strategy for self-deportation, because I'm thinking what he believes he'll do is make it easier for legislators to swallow as he starts hitting things systematically.
Yeah.
But what he said is, you have my word. One thing before he left the States, he reiterated, he said, you have my word that on every single one of these points, I will fight to make sure these things happen. I will end amnesty in America. Yeah. He said, you have my word.
All right. Well,
something to that effect. Very strong word.
All right. One last question. I got to let you go. Did you notice, for instance, the presence, if you will, that we noticed with Ben Carson with Ted Cruz?
Yeah, I got to be honest with you. There's only a few people in the race now that I notice it with, and he's one of them. To me at this point, I got to be honest, there's only four people that I feel need to be in the race at this point. And I was up to six last week, but I'm thinking Trump, Cruz, Carson, and actually I'll kind of fudge with five. And the latter two are going to probably shock you guys, but Santorum,
yep,
to me had that presence. And Bobby Jindal kind of does, but he needs some serious, there's no doubt he needs some serious work. But I got to be honest with you. So I'm like at 4.5 to 5 people.
Yeah.
But beyond that, I got to tell you, I'm losing it for people. Quite frankly, Kasich, I didn't feel it at all. I felt like, what is this guy doing?
I'm starting to feel sorry for the guy.
I did too.
Yeah.
I did too.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, Carl. Appreciate you so much. Thanks for being out there.
Great. Okay. All right. God bless you.
Great job.
All right. Take care. Thank you.
All right.
Bye.
And by the way, just a little quick rundown on the speeches. Marco Rubio, he, out of all of them, is by far the most polished politician. He kind of, in a way, and this is not meant as a criticism, just as an observation, kind of reminds me of John Edwards, where there's no hair out of place, mm-hmm, nothing is left to chance.
He's smooth
as they come. He spoke from a teleprompter. And he stood rigid at the podium, and he did not wander the stage as many of the other candidates did.
Yeah, you can't do that with a teleprompter.
No. And matter of fact, Chris Christie read from a speech. Carly Fiorina read from a speech. Rick Santorum did not. Bobby Jindal did not. Rand Paul did not. They tended to wander the stage and spoke without any kind of script, any kind of notes, or anything. And Bobby Jindal, he's kind of cool because when his hair gets a little long, he gets this big old front patch of hair, kind of like Elvis, you know. It kind of like, you know, juts out, and he combs it back, and he was wearing jeans and cowboy boots with a collared shirt and a jacket. I mean, he was styling and profiling. But
we were rocking jeans too, by the way.
Yeah, he did. That's right. But I thought, in the stump speech, he gives a very, very effective speech. He still has a problem with the smile thing. You know, he needs to do more of that. But Carly Fiorina, once again,
you know, to deliver.
It's the delivery. I mean, she was the last speaker, and a lot of people stuck around. Even though she was the last speaker, a lot of people stuck around to hear her, and it was an enthusiastic crowd for her. But I leaned over to Kathy and I said, she needs to be put in charge of the VA, because she would go in there and she would take care of business.
Take no prisoner.
All right. When we come back, and by the way, Ben Carson, should he not be the nominee, must be on the ticket as number two. He has to be on the ticket as number two. We'll be back. Hey, welcome back to the show, folks. We got a couple treats for you tonight. Yesterday, during the summit, we taped a couple of interviews. recorded, I guess is officially how they do it. They don't tape things anymore, but recorded a couple of interviews that we're going to play for you tonight. The first one is with Jennifer Sullivan. That's right, from District 31, right up the road here. And she was a speaker yesterday, and I'll just sort of let the interview take it from there. It's about 11 minutes long, so here is Jennifer Sullivan and I chatting on Radio Row from the summit in Orlando. Jeff, if you please, sir.
Okay, this is Christopher Hart once again coming to you from the GOP Sunshine Summit. It's now Saturday, and once again, we've got a full house here and a lot of great activities going on. And I have the pleasure of interviewing right now one of the recent speakers. She just, as a matter of fact, got off the stage, and a lot of you folks know her. A lot of you folks got the opportunity to vote for her. I'm talking about Jennifer Sullivan, member of the Florida House. Welcome to the show today, Jennifer. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a privilege.
Well, first of all, congratulations on a great speech. It was really great, and it seemed to get the crowd roused up a little bit.
Well, you're very kind to say that. It's an honor to be able to speak here today at the Sunshine Summit and to speak about something that's really near and dear to my heart, and that's getting young people engaged in the process and rebranding, reframing the issues for the Republican Party, that we are the Republican Party of opportunity, the party of opportunity. And I think with that message, we'll be able to win in 2016.
I want to ask you a couple of questions about what you did speak about. But first of all, I made an observation as you were speaking. The podium's rather large on the main stage, correct?
I mean, yes.
It's not a small podium. And sometimes with a large podium, the speaker can look rather small behind it. You did not. You looked large. I mean, you looked like you belonged not only on that stage, but behind that big podium. So your stage presence is quite remarkable. And that means a lot when it comes to politics. And so I don't know if other people noticed that, but certainly I did. Now, you spoke about millennials. And one thing you did, and I'd like you to do for my audience, is to define millennials.
Absolutely. Well, millennials are talked about so loosely, and I think that it is helpful to give more context. And what generation are we talking about? And that's ages 18 through 32. Millennials make up 25% of the U.S. population. They're people who challenge the status quo, especially when you look at companies, encouraging companies to be environmentally friendly, encouraging companies to support causes. Millennials are very cause-focused and care about the people around them. And they're also individuals who have grown up under the current administration, people who have gone to school to get degrees and haven't been able to find jobs within those degrees. They're also more pro-life than their parents, which as a principled conservative who stands for life is something really encouraging.
You also said millennials have a particular opportunity right now.
They do. I believe that millennials' voice potentially will never be as powerful as it is right now because it's so unexpected. Our generation in many ways has been written off as a generation that just has their head in their phone, feels entitled, and isn't hardworking. And I challenge that premise that millennials can do great things. We are people who challenge the status quo. We want to know why are things the way they are, and we want to build relationships with people and be very cause-focused.
And you say we because you are a millennial.
Indeed.
And millennials helped you get elected in Lake County, of all counties, right? A lot of people would expect that, maybe, right?
Absolutely. You know, we certainly didn't win because of a greater millennial voter turnout than perhaps normal. But we did win because we had millennials that were knocking on doors and working hard. Because for those that weren't even old enough to vote yet, they recognized that their vote, their values, rather, pardon me, their voice, their values could be represented in a candidate like myself. And I think that empowered them to help get behind me and knock on doors and work hard to help make it happen. We had over 100 volunteers, and that's really how we were able to win a five-way primary.
You also sort of challenged the millennials here in the hall a little bit. Could you wish to do that to the millennials in our audience?
I do. If you're listening to this here today, I would encourage you to get on Twitter and tweet at Florida spelled out G-O-P hashtag as a millennial,
okay.
Hashtag as a millennial, I care about and then what you care about. You know, a lot of times I hear that millennials say the Republican Party isn't listening. Well, they're listening today. So make your voice be heard. Get on Twitter at Florida GOP, hashtag
as a millennial.
I care about and make your voice heard.
Very good. Very good. Now, you were here yesterday. Obviously, you're here today. Were you at the opening dinner when Vice President Cheney spoke the other night by any chance?
You know, unfortunately, I couldn't make it to the dinner. I had a local town hall in my district, and my constituents have to come first. But I heard that it was a great event.
Yeah, I heard as well. And in particular, the riveting account he gave of what happened with him on 9/11.
Mm.
You were here yesterday and today. What's your feeling overall about the event, the candidates, and the response the candidates are getting from the crowd?
Yeah, well, I think it's been a very successful event. It's been great that we've been able to have all these presidential candidates here. I think there's a lot of individuals that are still undecided with who they're going to get behind. So having the opportunity to physically see the candidates speak, their presence, their issues, and be able to compare and contrast each other, I think is going to be helpful in turning some of these undecided voters into loyal activists, because the people that are here today are people who are activists and they're looking to get behind a candidate. And I think that's going to lead to these candidates' successes.
Now, I don't want you to get yourself in trouble, so I don't want you to say any names, but do you have a favorite or two?
I certainly have a couple that I'm continuing to do my research on and have been watching for a while, and look forward to seeing what comes about in the next few weeks.
Are you impressed by how some of the candidates, and once again, I'm not asking you to say you favor any of these candidates, but for instance, Trump, Carson, Cruz, seem to be very effectively using the social media. Are you impressed by that?
I think that anyone who taps into social media
is that a great way to get to the millennials, I guess is what I'm asking here.
Well, I think that it's an effective way to get to anyone. Again, I think millennials, though they use social media to a great extent, they're also individuals who want to be personally reached out to.
Okay.
They want a relationship to be built with them. And, you know, I think it's interesting to know, I went to a conference with Leadership Institute a couple years ago, and they were analyzing how the current administration was able to get so many young people behind their team, and it was because they asked. They went to college campuses. They reached out to students face-to-face with volunteers, and they asked them to join something that was greater than themselves with a mission and a cause. As Republicans, we have to be willing to make the ask. We have not because we ask not. If we go to college campuses and we reach out and we build relationships, I believe that we have the right principles that will reach this demographic, and they will be on our side, and they'll work hard for us.
Once again, I'm speaking right now with Jennifer Sullivan, member of the Florida House from the Lake County area. What is your district, actually?
House District 31. It encompasses most of Apopka, Mount Dora, Tavares, going all the way up to Umatilla.
Got a prime representative in a prime district. We are at the GOP Sunshine Summit, where she was a speaker this morning and did a quite effective job at it as well. I'd like to ask you a couple of questions about some state business. First of all, congratulations and thank you from my audience and myself for what you did this past session, in particular the waiting period. Can you just kind of give us a little sort of inside baseball, how that all happened?
Absolutely. Probably one of my most controversial bills of the session, and that was House Bill 633, 24-hour reflection period, empowering women to make an informed, educated decision versus a rushed and unexpected one, enabling them to have a face-to-face consultation with a doctor that would be performing the procedure, and giving them 24 hours to then reflect upon that before going back through with the procedure.
And it did pass. The governor did sign it. It did find some challenges in the courts, which was to be expected,
exactly.
Right? But you have to start with getting the legislation, right, passed
Indeed.
And signed into law. And
Indeed.
Then you work that next battle.
Absolutely.
And that's where we're at now. Any particular bills that you're going to want to really push hard this time?
You know, I've got a few things in the pipeline, and I'm continuing to do my research. I filed a bill that will increase the corporate income tax exemption from $50,000 to $75,000. I'm also working on a bill that's going to help some small business owners and whatnot. I've got some other exciting things coming up that will be released soon, and look forward to sharing those once they've been filed.
Okay. Just another question or two, if you don't mind. First of all, there are a lot of bills having to do with the Second Amendment rights that are being, looks like they're working their way through the committees and toward the session. What is your general feeling about those?
You know, I'm a strong proponent of the Second Amendment, the right to to bear arms, and so I would continue to be supportive of that right.
Okay. Well, listen, Jennifer Sullivan, thank you so much for spending some
time with us today.
And I hope you'll come back and be on the show when we have a lot of time. Well, I see I actually have a couple more minutes here, so let me ask you one last question. And, of course, I anticipate you're going to run for re-election.
I am. I have filed.
You have already filed.
I have filed.
And do you have a website where people can
help
you out?
I do. That's voteforjennifer.com. My social media accounts are voteforjennifer as well, so feel free to check those out. And if there's any constituents listening today, if you have an issue or concern, feel free to reach out to our office. We're there off 19 in Eustace. We also do monthly office hours specifically in Apopka, and so would be more than happy to sit down and hear some of your concerns and see how I can be of assistance.
And, of course, you're looking for volunteers again, right?
Absolutely. Volunteers. I always take contributions as well. So feel free to join our team and be a part of the Fresh Voice team.
Okay, one last time, that website, how can people Facebook?
VoteForJennifer.com.
VoteForJennifer.com. And that's for the number or?
Spelled out, actually.
Okay, I kind of got in trouble a little bit on that yesterday. I said it the wrong way. Vote for, you spell it all out, VoteForJennifer.com. Well, God bless
Correct.
You, Jennifer Sullivan, and your mother and your whole family. Obviously,
Thank you.
You got great parents, great story for here in Florida, and I look forward to helping you get elected over and over and over again. So,
oh, well, thank you. Have a blessed day.
All right. Thanks. All right. Once again, welcome back to the show, folks. And that was one of the cool things, and we were just talking about it, is all the young
talent
coming up
that was out there.
Yeah, the young talent coming up, young guys and gals coming up.
Pretty in politics.
Not just the gals. Wow.
Definitely some very promising conservatives coming up ranks.
Listen, it doesn't matter. I mean, you go online, you take a look at all the Republican women, the majority of them are good looking.
And then you look at...
Then you look at Sheila Jackson Lee.
Oh, God. Hillary.
Hillary, the old pillbox.
The pair, yeah.
It just goes on.
Yeah, an old stretch Pelosi.
Yeah, the more you mention, the uglier they get.
Yeah. So. Anyway, we got one more of the interviews like that. It's about 9 minutes long. We'll play it in the next segment of the show. It's with Matthew Parks, and Matthew is the treasurer for the UCF GOP, I believe it was. And a little short conversation with him and what they're doing out at UCF. And things going on out there as well.
Right, because the UCF Young Republicans radio show, a radio team was in the booth next to ours.
Yeah. So,
great guys.
Right there on Radio Row. And we had the prime real estate in Radio Row, too.
Center stage.
Radio was next to us, and we were center stage. That's right. They had the one of the other local channels on the far end down there.
Yes, well... Where they were supposed to be.
Yes, I was going to say, somebody got it right, didn't they? All right, speaking of getting it right, we're looking for you folks to get it right with our Who Said That quote tonight. I'm going to read that, and then Aubrey's got a couple of news updates for us. You know how to play this. It's real easy. In case you don't, we read a quote. You simply call us up and tell us who said it. If you're right, you'll win a $20 gift card to Cafe Positano and a My Liberty Threads t-shirt, which they are, of course, made in America, and with American thread and American hands stitching them together. And MyLibertyThreads.com is where you can find out all about the shirts and order them and hats as well. And if you don't want to go through that process, you can come to our Pizza Eating Challenge tomorrow night, where Scott Miller will be set up with some My Liberty Threads that you can actually buy, some great new threads. And, you know, the holiday season is coming up. Great gifts, our t-shirts, you know, especially these cool t-shirts.
Yeah, you can. If you're lucky, you can also get an American Adversaries t-shirt.
That's right. We're going to have some of those there. We're going to have some great prizes and door prizes. Got some books, RX for America, Ben Carson's RX for America, that we got yesterday. We'll be giving those away to the first couple of dozen people who show up. They'll get a free. It's a handheld pocket size, if you will, a paperback book, and the kind
kinds, like you used to be able to buy off the rack at Publix. I don't know if they still have them there or not. Maybe they do. But anyway.
It's Prescription for America.
That's right. We've got a couple of dozen of those to give away to the first people to show up. But in the meantime, if you know the answer to this quote, give us a call. We're looking at somebody who's never won before or hasn't won in a long time to win tonight's prizes. And all you have to do is tell us who said, I am not content to manage the decline of a great nation. If you know who said that, give us a call, 407-774-8255. I am not content to manage the decline of a great nation. Who said that? All right, in the meantime, Aubrey Kahn has a couple of news updates for us.
But to that question,
yeah,
is the second half, I intend to accelerate it, because that would be
Barry Obama.
There you go. I just gave the answer away.
No, I think this person is a much bigger person than Barry Obama. Let's just put it.
Bigger?
This person has a bigger set than Barry Obama does. Let's put it that way.
Bigger set.
Bigger set than Barry Obama.
He's wide at the shoulders and the... Never mind.
I am not content to manage the decline of a great nation. Who said that? All right, in the meantime, Aubrey Kahn does have some sort of late-breaking news for us.
Yeah, Laura Ingraham, the conservative talk show host, her plane was evacuated. Two Middle Eastern-looking young men led away by police at D.C.'s Reagan National Airport.
That was this evening.
That was this evening. Flight 2124 was evacuated at the departure gate with police and bomb-sniffing dogs searching the plane. Eventually, two Middle Eastern-looking men bearing green passports were led away by police. Ingraham noted that neither man had carry-on luggage, and they did not protest being removed from the flight. She said the pilot made an announcement that the men were asked about a paperwork issue and gave unsatisfactory answers, so they were being dealt with.
Uh-huh. How about that? And this was tonight at Reagan National, you said?
Yes, sir.
Wow. So obviously the eyes and ears are, let's just say, working a little bit harder because of what happened in France
people
the other night.
People are a bit more attentive.
Yeah.
Maybe the TSA will actually find something now.
Yeah, perhaps. I'm not going to hold my breath on that one, though.
Yeah.
But fortunately, they didn't find any bomb, though, I take it, on the flight.
There's no...
Yeah.
There's no report on that. Another thing, you know how strong the U.S. dollar is? Well, China is welcoming the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, looking into making the Chinese yen...
The yuan.
The yuan, sorry. It used to be the yen. Now it's the yuan.
The yen is Japanese.
The yuan. The one, the only.
Yuan.
All right.
The yuan. They are going to do what with the yuan?
They want to make it a world reserve currency.
A world reserve currency. How about that?
So you know how... Well, China and Russia have been planning this for a long time.
Well, and there are things...
To unseat the U.S. dollar.
And it's already started. It started a year or so ago when the agreement that the Saudis and other oil-producing nations made with the United States that the price of oil would be based on the dollar and that the oil would be transferred on the market based on dollars. That agreement expired and it is no longer being... Practiced.
No longer being practiced, no.
Correct.
It's whatever.
Right. So that is a huge, let's just say, one of the pillars that holds the dollar up as a world currency was taken away.
Right.
And now it's floating out there, more subject to market conditions, there's no question about that, but now also more subject to being undermined by people's purposely trying to do just that. You see... The markets work because the presumption is people want them to work. When you have a group, especially if it's a very large and influential group, that does not want the market to work, that's when you got problems. And one of the sort of guarantees that wouldn't happen was what they called the petrodollar.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no longer a petrodollar, so the chances of our currency being manipulated is tremendous. And as a matter of fact, Mike McBath brought this out on the show the other day in terms of this free trade agreement. And any free trade agreement, a lot of these agreements are based on the assumption that the agreeing parties will not try to undermine one another's currencies. But of course, if the agreement doesn't have any sanctions against that, in other words, penalties for it, then there is no reason why not to do it.
Exactly.
And so they could, say, come up with an agreement with the Chinese that you have to pay so much for your labor or something, trying to equalize the cost of producing a product. But if they then devalue their currency, you still get the same effect, that their products will be cheaper than ours.
Right, which is what they have always done.
Right. That's exactly right. So, okay, thanks for those updates. And that is breaking news tonight. Also, we're still looking for our first guest. I'm surprised here. I would have thought some of our audience would have been all over this, but I did put out the caveat. We're looking for somebody new or somebody who hasn't won in a while, but still, some one of you must know who said, "I am not content to manage the decline of a great nation." If you know who said that, you could get a $20 gift card to Cafe Positano and a My Liberty Threads t-shirt. Maybe it's just that Pasquale gave out
too many
last week, I tell you. And by the way, if you won one of those $20 gift cards to Positano last week when Pasquale was here and you have not received it yet because we ran out of the plastic ones, we're having to get some more. If you show up at the spaghetti eating, the pizza eating challenge tomorrow, I'll have the list, and we'll know who you are, and we'll go ahead and get you that $20 off tomorrow night if you show up, if you won one last week. In the meantime, we're still looking. Who said, "I am not content to manage the decline of a great nation"? And it wasn't Steve Spurrier. You know, he didn't say that when he, you know, said he wasn't content to be a coach of a declining football team.
Technically, two people have said this.
Yeah, well, okay, all right, well, we'll figure out maybe if it's if we'll get two answers. We'll see. 407-774-8255 is the number. We'll compare notes when we get back. Don't go away. And don't forget, tomorrow, Cafe Positano, 5 o'clock. We'll be there. It will be fun. And there'll be a lot of pizza to go around.
Bring your empty stomach with.
Please don't go away. Okay, enjoy the show, too. We hope you are enjoying it anyway. You are listening to the American Adversaries, and we're in the midst of trying to figure out who said, "I am not content to manage the decline of a great nation." Come on, this is a big leader. This is one, you know, we should know. This is one of the big trio. One of the big trio.
A friend of the Gipper.
Oh, we gave away a couple of tents right there. 407-774-8255 is the number if you haven't ever won or have not won for a long time. We're looking for you to get in on this thing right now. And don't forget the pizza eating challenge tomorrow. In the meantime, as I said, we'll have an interview that recorded. I keep wanting to say taped. We recorded yesterday with Matthew Parks. He's the treasurer of the UCF GOP, UCF young GOP guys and gals out there. And that'll be a little bit later on in the show. In the next segment, we're going to have Sunny, our California glow girl, join us from her new digs up to the mountains, which, by the way, they're getting some rain and snow in California.
Yeah.
All across, including in Southern California.
It's good. They need it. But what's going to happen with mudslides?
Well, it's you know, when it rains, it pours. Yeah,
uh-huh.
Yeah, that's what you get.
Sounds like my old backyard's in trouble.
You from California?
Sacramento.
Sacramento.
Where I was born and raised the first 8 years.
I thought it never rains in Southern California.
Well, according to Jerry Brown, it was never going to rain in Southern California again.
Right.
So, wow.
Thankfully, he was wrong. Maybe thankfully.
Liberals are always wrong. You just have to wait a little while to see. But their liberals are always wrong.
Well, you don't have to wait a while. I mean, Hillary made up numbers on violent gun murders in the United States.
Yeah, liberals are always
on Saturday night.
Liberals are always wrong. That's what's right about them. Oh yeah, she made up a bunch of things. Bernie Sanders was a joke. When it comes to terrorism, he just can't get away from
it's because
the
of global warming. Global warming is what's causing terrorism. And if we gave everyone a solar panel, it would end the terrorism.
Did
he go back to his spaceship that he got off here on? I mean,
no, they dumped him here because they were tired of him too.
Let's just try to really understand what he was saying. He says that climate change is directly related to the growth of terrorism. What he's trying to say is, and I've read this argument in several places, Syria, parts of Syria were experiencing drought as well. And because of that, there was, you know, people were having a hard time. And there wasn't the famine in the sense like they suffer in many of the countries in Africa when there's drought. But nonetheless, people were suffering, and food costs were going up. There was food inflation. There was energy inflation. Bad economy. The sour economy because of the drought. And they are trying to blame that and say that that has led to the rise in the unrest, which led to the Civil War, which then has led to the rampant terrorism. And that if only there weren't the drought, this wouldn't have happened. And, of course, the drought was obviously caused by
man-made global warming.
Correct. And just like Southern California with Jerry Brown. Now, it's raining in Southern California, I think right now as we're talking, or at least it did today. And the long-range forecast is they're going to get a whole lot more over the winter. Wow. Because of El Nino. A lot of snow, a lot of rain in that part of the country. And as it comes off the Pacific Ocean there. And the situation in Syria is similar. The droughts come and go. This is a natural part of life as a human being on this planet. Conditions are never always ideal. It's like right now we have some ideal fall weather. But guess what? It's going to go away. It's not going to stay. And it doesn't matter what we do in the process. And for this idiot to come out and say this, he's trying to be sophisticated and nuanced, see? And yet he's still, even the liberal talking heads are saying this sounds wacky. I mean, and so when the liberal talking heads are say it's sounding wacky, what they're saying is, calm down, Bernie. You're spoiling the argument here. You're exposing the argument for climate change of its true wackiness.
But you know what the cause of man-made global warming is?
What?
Income inequality.
There you go. And he just goes round and round with all of this stuff, right? And but he, as we've said on the show repeatedly, he, Martin O'Malley, and the other ones before they were gone, they are just simply there to make Hillary.
Window dressing, yeah.
Window dressing. We call it enhancement talent. Tell them what it is there, Lucas.
Give me 1 second here.
He's hard at work on the he's doing the YouTube thing over here.
All right, what was that again?
tell him what enhancement talent is.
Enhancement talent are the guys that put over the guys that are higher up on the car to keep those guys looking good. So,
let me translate that for you.
The fall guy.
Basically, you're a fall guy. You take a fall.
Exactly. In wrestling, that's the guy who goes into the ring to get beat up by the champion to make the champion look good. And that's what Bernie Sanders is there for.
Although kind of like a Dolph Ziggler kind of type.
That he's talking in current WWE, the roster in current WWE.
Those who are watching know what I'm talking about.
Oh, by the way, I just got this from Sunny, our California glow girl. The phone might not work. There is snow showers. Where she's at. Imagine that in California.
Snow showers.
In November?
Can you believe
it's got to be global warming.
It's got to be. It's got to be. And it's going to cause terrorism, rampant terrorism in California.
Yeah, and
what a moron. I mean,
but where's the most income inequality?
Let's just think
about California.
Yeah, I tell you what. Let's just think about it this way. Let's take his logic and play it out a little bit.
Okay.
All right, this global warming is supposedly, you know, contributing to this rampant run-up in terrorism in that part of the world. Has global warming occurred only in that part of the world? Or is it occurring supposedly worldwide? In other words, it's a global phenomena.
Well, it all depends on what your world is.
It's a global, supposedly a global phenomena, obviously, right?
Supposedly.
Then why isn't it causing rampant terrorism and chaos and things in other parts of the world? Why is it only in the Arab Muslim world is it doing this?
Because that's
the hot answers.
Spot.
Yeah.
And like a wagon wheel, the spokes, it's dispersing to the outer rims.
What is that? That's the hot spot of the global warming? Is
that's got to be.
Oh, it must be.
Because it can't be the Arctic where the pack ice is growing.
Well, all I can say is if global warming is contributing to it, all it is doing then is revealing Islam for what it really is. All right, let's go to the phone lines. All right, so I'm sorry. Let's go to the phone lines while we still have some time in this segment and see if we can figure out who said, "I am not content to manage the decline of a great nation." We're going to start with Alex from Winter Park. Alex,
hey,
thank
how you guys
for
doing?
Excellent. How
all
about
right.
you tonight?
Pretty good, pretty good.
Thank you. Thank you.
I believe it is Carly Fiorina.
Carly Fiorina did say that yesterday, but she is
all
not
right.
She is not the first one to say it, however.
Oh, I hinted that, remember? I said two people said this.
I'm sorry, I shouldn't have done that to you, Alex. That was cruel of me. That was cruel of me, Alex, but it was not. It actually was not Carly Fiorina. But she did say it yesterday, and actually she credited it to the person that we're looking for. All right?
Okay.
So thank you for calling tonight.
No,
appreciate
problem.
It. Thank you so
you
much.
You're doing a great job.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate you being out there. All right, that's going to take us next to Eloise. Eloise, thank you for calling tonight. Who do you think said that? Who did Carly Fiorina refer to when she said, "I am not content to manage the decline of a great nation"?
I believe that is Margaret Thatcher.
It was.
Ring the bell.
Maggie Thatcher. You got that right. Yeah, as a matter of fact, one of her more famous quotes, if I'm not mistaken, is it not?
I'm not sure.
Well, it certainly is a quote by her, and it was in regards to the declining military might, the declining economic might of Great Britain, and she was not there to just oversee that. She was there to turn it all around, and she did.
She did.
And as I said, she was part of the big trio. Did you get it because of a we gave you some hints, or did you just take an educated guess, Eloise?
Well, I cannot tell a lie. I looked it up.
That's okay, too.
Thank you, Google.
Right. There you go. So you did the work. You got the prize. Have you ever been to Cafe Positano?
No, I haven't.
Do you like Italian food?
Oh, love it.
Then you're going to like Cafe Positano, I guarantee you. When you go there, would you please say hello to Pasquale for us?
Oh, of course. I'd be glad to.
Oh, he'll get a big thrill out of that. He just loves it when people come in and want to talk to him about the show and stuff like that. So, Eloise, once again, thanks for calling. And you have won. And I guess we got your information, including your shirt size.
Yes, sir. That's correct. And thank you very much.
All right. Thanks for being out there. And once again, enjoy your trip to Cafe Positano. All right.
I will, and I enjoy your show very much. I love listening to it.
Well, thank you so much. That's very humbling, and we'll try to keep up the same level of fun and banter. Thank you, Eloise.
You will.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you, Eloise. Appreciate you being out there. It was Margaret Thatcher who said that, and Carly Fiorina referred to Margaret Thatcher yesterday. And Carly Fiorina, in a lot of ways, is like Margaret Thatcher in that she's a tough, smart woman. But Margaret Thatcher managed to yet come across a little bit softer. I mean, she had that there. I don't know if you remember Margaret Thatcher's smile, but it's a very distinctive smile, and she flashed it a lot. And so she had that friendlier side to her as well. But, hey, I tell you what, I would not want to go up against Prime Minister Thatcher in any kind of a military fight because,
no.
Yeah, she will put it on you, buddy. And she bucked up George H.W. Bush, by the way. Some folks may not know this, but when Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait, H.W. kind of knew what he needed to do, but he really was kind of noncommittal. And she came over, and in a personal meeting with him, she said, come on, buddy, you know what has to be done. Do it.
Spanked his rear, effectively.
She sure did, buddy. And he went ahead and took care of business. So great woman. And without Margaret Thatcher, Ronald Reagan, and Pope John Paul, I dare say, even with Barack Obama and what he's done in this world, we'd be a whole lot worse off without that trio. All right. Anyway, that's going to wrap up the second hour of our three-hour classic Sunday evening tour. As we race back to port, we're going to beat in our Caribbean cruise liner, but they got another night to go, and I can't wait to hear what it was like. But we'll do that again. Don't worry. We're already working on another one of those. In the meantime, we got Patricia, our California glow girl, coming.
When America fell into darkness, a call rang out across the land.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the champions of political professional wrestling, the American Adversaries.
All right, folks, that's right. It's time for our visit with our bad, bad girl. We'll get to that here in just a minute. You got the American Adversaries coming to you live on our Sunday evening three-hour classic tour. Don't forget, we're just the start of live radio around here tonight. You got three more hours when we go off the air from 8 to 11 with Armed American Radio and the guys Mark Walters. And don't forget, you can call us at 407-774-8255. Christopher Hart here, along with Aubrey Kahn, the awesome Kahn, and General Lucas Paris has the Periscope up and running. Jeff Sinis is on the bridge. Real quick, how can they view us, Lucas?
Go to YouTube.com. Type in Adversaries TV in the search bar. Adversaries TV, one word. Click on our channel by the same name. Newest videos are at the top. We have 7 of them up there right now. Older ones are in descending order. Come to Periscope Death, the American Adversaries. The general told you to.
I tell you what, I bet we would get a whole lot more viewers if we could only get Sunny. That would be Patricia Sutherland, our California glow girl, on the line with us right now, live from California. Sunny, are you cold?
How did you guess, guys? Boy, sunny's not so sunny up here anymore.
Oh, you need to come visit.
It's snowing right now. We're getting snow showers. And, it's quite a bit different, I must admit, guys. The city girl goes to the mountains.
And gets snowed on.
I'm not sure if I'm cut out for this.
Well, I tell you what. We didn't get a chance to last week, and I know it's already passed, but we want to wish you happy birthday.
Yes. Happy birthday, Sonny.
Happy birthday to you,
Yay.
Sonny.
Happy birthday to me.
29 again.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you know, it was a nice birthday. I had a whole couple people that made it up here because they all said, where's Lake of the Woods? How far is that?
We got a Lake of the Woods
right
here. Yes, we do.
I'm like, well, it's in the mountains. It's about 7,000 feet high. But it's really beautiful up here. Come on. So I got two people. You know, those are my true friends. You know who shows
yes.
up for your birthday and takes that wonderful drive. And it's pitch dark up here. It's pretty scary. And they make it their way up here. They did. So I was very blessed and thankful. thankful that they did. Because and they made their way back. They had to follow each other on this long road. I had one of my friends, I'm like, nope, you can't leave without the other person following you because you will get lost.
There you go. Sleds and sleds and huskies.
How far?
Oh, boy, it is. It really, and, you know, people would never think that here in California. It's like we go down to Los Angeles. It's beautiful. Yesterday, I was in Griffin's Park with the diabetes walk, which was a lot of fun and beautiful down there. And it's only an hour and a half away from where I'm at. It's night and day. You think I'm in Alaska up here.
I was just going to ask how far outside of Los Angeles. I take it then you're sort of northeast of Los Angeles, more
going
or less?
North, guys. Yeah. Yep. Off the one you've heard of, Gorman and the Grapevine, where all the big accidents happen in the wintertime.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That's the road we got to take to get here.
Oh, my.
And then we veer off onto another road, which takes us outside of Los Angeles County. I now reside in Kern County. So if you know anything about, you know, California, Kern County side goes towards the Mojave Desert and Ridgecrest up that side. So, you know, we leave Los Angeles Crest Forest and go into Los Padres National Forest.
Wow.
That's where I'm at.
Wow.
7,000 feet up, though.
It must be.
Which is higher than Big Bear.
It is. Yeah.
I'm really going to the extremes. I don't know what's wrong with Sunny. I really don't. I go from the desert to the city to the mountains. So you can't say I haven't covered it all.
I'll tell you what, you're taking us with you every step of the way.
But you wouldn't want to have been here last week. I took the sheriffs and everybody with me.
I had a
runaway car due to this weather. I thought someone stole it. They found it miraculously up against a neighbor's garage across the street, smashed in.
Oh, wow.
And that wasn't fun now because I have a manual transmission on my new car.
Nice.
Because I thought, well, that's going to be fun. And I love, you know, stick shifts. Why not? Well, I put it in, you know, neutral. I didn't put it in first gear. Pulled the brake all the way up, which usually the car will stay.
Right.
Never, you know, nothing's going to move it. Well, up here, the sheriff said it's a possibility because of the freezing temperatures.
Right.
It, you know, caused my car to backslide and go all the way down. I don't know how it turned into this guy's driveway. But, yeah, so I wasn't happy about that.
I guess
freaked
not.
Out. Yeah, used to those things. It was pitch dark. We couldn't even tell until the sun, rose the next morning.
Well, you know,
and
Sonny,
the sheriff goes, ma'am, is that your car out there? That's how it is up here. It's like,
wow.
Mayberry. One sheriff, two CHP showed up an hour later. Yeah. So I'm not used to that. No, I was having a bit of a rough day that day.
You know, if you really want to live in the mountains, you've got to come to Florida. Our highest mountain is probably about 35 feet above sea level.
I really need to be there.
Yeah.
I agree. Maybe that's the next
hill,
endeavor.
That's a hill,
Aubrey. It's a mountain in Florida.
Well, I tell you, I can sympathize with you on the cold weather stuff because, you know, we living in the warm weather environments don't know the little tricks that you need to know when you're living in that kind of environment.
Right. It's freezing here. It's all of 78 degrees.
I remember going out to my, this was a long time ago when I was going to college. I'd have to go early in the morning, and I went out and where I was living, and I had inherited my dad's old 64 T-Bird, right?
And you sold that.
Well, I was like an idiot, but I went out and I put the key in the door, and I couldn't turn the key. It was, you know, it was impossible to turn the key, and I was sitting there, you know, shivering, and this sheriff pulls up behind me, and he goes, "Can I help you?" I guess maybe thought I was trying to jimmy the door or something. I said, "Yeah," and I showed him my key. I said, "I can't get the key to work. I know this is the right key." He goes, "Oh," he hands me a cigarette lighter. He goes, "Here, heat up your key." And I said, "What?" He said, "Heat up your key." So I did, and it opened right up. He said, "Yeah." He said, he was from Michigan or somewhere like that. I said, "Yeah, we deal with that all the time up there." I said, "Wow." So
Well, that's what I feel like when I took my trip to Michigan, Ohio, anywhere back there. That's what's happening here, and it's coming down pretty good right now.
Well,
and I'm glad that we got a connection because I've experienced the phone lines go out here too. You know, so that isn't fun.
Well, according to our weather guy, you're in for a lot more snow that it's coming your way because of the El Nino. I'm sure you've heard of that.
Oh, yes. Yes. Yeah. Well, as a matter of fact, we've been discussing that.
Yeah,
and
that's right.
I never thought I'd be up here right in it, but
you
I'm
are.
Experiencing it up here anyway.
You are. Matter of fact, I think they even got a little bit of rain in Los Angeles today as well, maybe even right now. They were projected to anyway.
Probably. Well, it's snowing here, and it's pretty darn cold, and I just hope I can leave out tomorrow because I'm supposed to be on my way to Louisiana early Tuesday morning.
Yeah, you're going to meet with our friend Michael Sam Houston.
Yes, which I look forward to and very excited. He is now speaking in churches, so I want to give a shout-out to him, and he's doing a great job, and they love him, and that's wonderful, you know.
Now, you're going there next weekend?
Yeah, I'll be there until the 24th.
Okay. Are you going to be with him, actually, next Sunday?
If I'm there, I shall be.
Well, if not, what we'll do is...
Whenever the 24th is, I couldn't even tell you if I fly back.
Yeah, Jeff and I will get with him this week and see if we can set that all up, arrange it for next Sunday night. So we'll have both of you guys on, whether you're actually physically with him or not.
Fantastic.
Yeah, because...
he's doing great. And his daughters, I guess, are in a band. They're doing fabulous. He's visiting with them, and he said to tell you guys, he says hello.
Yep.
And
I know he's a big listener to the show, and it's been long overdue. We need to get him back on the show.
Oh, yes.
And then you also revealed some sad news to us that we had not heard.
Oh, yeah. In the wrestling world, it's been shattered once again. We lost the greatest legend, now icon, which is Nick Bockwinkel, passed away.
One of the best of the heels we've ever lived.
Lucas wanted to say something.
Sure.
Yeah, Nick Bockwinkel, that was one of the best technical and heel villain wrestlers of his time period that spanned literally from the mid-50s all the way into the 80s. One of the last things he did was help put over Kurt Hennig with the AWA world title. So it was like that man is one of the most amazing wrestlers with a very long, long career behind him.
That's
I heard that news. I was shocked.
I was blessed to meet him last year. Well, I met him actually briefly a few years before that at the CAC first, but last year I really got an opportunity to sit and take a picture, shake his hand, and give him a hug, and to listen to his speech. It was quite moving last year. Each year it gets more moving because we learn more and we lose more, but they're always with us in our heart. So we thank him, and God knows he's one of the best. And, you know, we give praise and thanks for all his wonderful work, and may he rest in peace up there and look down on us and throw one over, take one over, and kick one out of the ring.
Much love for Nick Bockwinkel.
Yeah,
yes.
Absolutely. It's been a tough year for professional wrestlers. The old guys, the
classics, the best of the classics.
Dusty, Dusty, Roddy.
I've lost three favorites this year with all three of them now.
It was a heavy year, and next year I can only tell you I'll be bawling at the CAC again in the ballroom. I'll be with a bigger box of tissue this time.
Where is it going to be next year?
It's going to be in April in Vegas, as it always is, at
Vegas
the Gold Coast Hotel.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That is where it's held. And it's usually from, I think, April 15th to the 17th, I want to say. And hopefully, well, you guys know Brian Blair. He should keep you apprised on that.
Oh, yeah.
He's the head of. And I'm trying to work him over so we can get our inducted into the HOF, all of us girls, because it'll be 30 years, guys. We deserve our time. So
absolutely.
I'm hoping... You know, Brian hears us, and I know he hears me. he does.
Yeah, well, he's a great guy, and he visits us on a regular basis as well on the show. He's got some great insights.
He's a wonderful person, very nice, and he told me what to do. He said, Sonny, I can't believe you guys haven't been inducted yet, number one. I said, yeah, I know. Number two, he goes, why don't you petition it on Facebook and other sites and get people up. That's how we do it, and get them, to jump on the bandwagon. And I said, sure. So that's what I've been doing. So we'll see what happens, and hopefully at his end and whatever the, you know, political ways happen. As we know, everything is political, especially wrestling and politics. It's one and the same.
Hey, listen,
so we'll see.
Sonny,
see what happens.
Aubrey just gave us some new poll numbers on the Republican side. Now, obviously, Hillary's beginning to run away with this thing on the Democratic side. But this was pretty surprising on the Republican side. I want to just get your thoughts about this. What are they, again, Aubrey? These are brand-new poll numbers.
Brand-new poll numbers. Trump has leapt some 17 percentage points among likely Republican voters, and he's essentially he was tied with Ben at 25%. He now captures 42% of those votes, while Carson has fallen somewhat.
In other words, Trump has jumped way out into the lead.
Right.
He's broken through the 40% barrier where he's not done this in a national poll before. And this is since the debate. And I would assume that since the terrorist attack in France, his poll numbers
surge again.
Yeah, because a lot of what he's been talking about is now coming to the forefront. What's your reaction there, Son?
I agree. And hey, I don't. I go either way with Trump. Like I said, a Republican out of that whole crew, the ones that are ahead are the ones that I would choose. You know, I was for Carson, like I said.
Yeah.
If I had to in that lineup, Trump is. You know, he's looking pretty shiny.
What about that's what Lucas just said. He's the one with all the sparkle.
Yeah. Everything that glitters right now is gold in the American culture.
But yeah. When you think about it, a lot of what he's been saying now comes to fruition, and the other candidates kind of fall in and echo in their own ways stuff that he's been talking about. But what would you think about a Trump-Carson ticket? Would they perhaps tempt you to vote for them rather than Democrats?
Yeah, I mean, it's a possibility. We have a ways to go yet. I don't get easily cited yet, and there's much more that I want to hear and much more that they have to prove by the time Obama leaves, you know, his throne.
Yeah.
And as we know, there's a longer race yet to go.
His throne. I like the way you said that.
I want to see much more.
Yeah.
Because, again, everyone can talk, and they do a good talk.
Right.
Well, I want to see some action, as we all do. We all need that for our world right now. Less action from the ISIS, of course, from Islamic world. They need to just, you know, stand down. And that's it, because it's sad.
It's a tragic
thing what happened to Paris, and RIP to all, you know, the lost souls and their families. Condolences go out. I mean, how horrible.
Right.
It's horrible.
Sonny, question for you. What advice would you give Obama regarding ISIS?
He should have made them stand down a long time ago. He should have did more. I think he's been laxed, and people say just because there's the theory that he's Muslim, that he's not taking action. You know, he's feeling a certain affinity for them. You know, you hear all sorts of talk with Obama and the Muslim.
Well, I think we said first was the main thing, though, is he failed to act when it counted. And now we're in a much worse place because of it. But we're always in a better place when you're on the show. Glad to have you back.
Thank you, guys. I miss you guys. And I feel good always when I'm on here.
We like
to shed some light and talk about what's important in this world. And, of course, we know God is. In all of us and all of our faiths. So be happy out there, smile always, and love each other.
Once again, happy birthday. Wish we could be there to give you hugs and kisses.
Yeah, I feel them now, guys. Trust me. I wish you were, because it would be more warmth.
Yeah. All right.
Thank you, guys.
Take care.
God bless.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
We'll be back. Okay, we're going to play for you now our interview with Matthew Parks from yesterday at the summit. Jeff, please, if you would, sir.
Welcome again to the GOP Sunshine Summit. I am Christopher Hart, and we're still here at the Rose and Shingle Creek, beautiful hotel. We're here Saturday now. And not only have candidates been here and vendors been here, but we also have the UCF College Republicans here, and they happen to be on Radio Row right next to us, and they've been getting great traffic at their booth. And we have, I guess it's the president, we'll find out, of the College Republicans at UCF, Matthew Parks, with us. Matthew, thanks for being here today.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm the current treasurer of the UCF College Republicans.
Current treasurer, okay. First of all, you know, I went to UCF, and I graduated with a bachelor's degree back in 1982. And there was, you know, a small presence around the campus of young Republicans. How is it looking out there now?
Oh, it's looking fantastic. This year we got out and really canvassed. We tabled and worked on marketing, hanging up banners and posters around campus. Our meetings are standing room only at this point. We have 150 members with usually about 70 people who come out to every meeting.
Yeah, and as I said, it was much smaller than that back when I was going to school there. And back then it was known as a conservative campus. And since then, I presume the campus has kind of changed, as most of America has.
Very much so.
And but nonetheless, I would think that the interest in your organization might be growing out there because of the economy and things.
Very much so. We're very blessed to be on UCF campus. We are actually a very conservative campus still, in the fact that we don't have radical liberal professors. There are liberal professors out there, but as a general, the campus is very conservative, and we have a great group of students out there who believe in the American message and want to achieve better for themselves.
Are you trying to get more students at UCF to register as Republicans, just get interested in politics in general? What would be your goal?
All we're trying to do out here is we're trying to motivate the students to take action in their future and get involved with politics, with local, federal, and to know who's making the decisions that influence their life and impact their life so greatly.
Were you able to see Jennifer Sullivan speak today?
I did not get the chance.
Okay,
I was out here
over
working.
Here working. Okay, all right. Well, I caught most of her speech, and she spoke about the millennial generation. She defined the millennial generation, 18 to 32, active, very conscious about social issues, and very more politically motivated than perhaps in the past. She also said the millennials have a unique opportunity at this time because everybody's kind of not really counted them in the process. Do you see the same thing?
I think there's a aspect of that. We're just trying to get them engaged, and I would like to see more so, but we're working on getting that started.
Do you use the social network a lot in your efforts?
Absolutely. We're on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at GOPUCF, and we stay very active, posting nearly every day, at least once a day.
GOPUCF.
Yes, sir.
And does it cost anything for students to join your organization out there? How's it funded?
Right now we're mostly through donations and working with private individuals to help fund and donate to the club. The membership is $20 to get involved as a member for the year, and you get a T-shirt with that. But right now, I'm working on fundraising. We'd like to take trips to students to conferences, get them to events and activities. So we're working on pushing our fall fundraiser and kicking that off, and starting off with the fundraiser for CPAC scholarships to get students to CPAC.
Do you ever hold events out there on the campus, like during school hours, where you
absolutely,
as you said, you hang banners and stuff like that?
Absolutely.
But, do you set up tables like you have here?
We will set up a table at least three times a week. We're out there advertising to the students, telling them about what the camp or the club is about, and trying to champion the conservative message to them. And we host all sorts of events as far as get-togethers. We bring speakers onto campus, and we're very active. And it's all posted on the social media, on Facebook and Instagram, and it's all up to date.
Once again, I'm talking with Matthew Parks. He's the treasurer of the UCF College Republicans, a great organization out there. And once again, what's the Facebook site where people can visit?
It's UCF GOP.
That's real easy. UCF GOP on Facebook. And is this your first conference like this?
No, sir. We've had the opportunity to go through several conferences. We've worked with organizations such as YAF.
Who's that?
Young Americans for Freedom.
Okay.
And we've gone out to Santa Barbara and had the chance to tour Ronald Reagan's ranch. We've done the Sunshine Summit. We go to CPAC every year, which is the Conservative Political Action Committee. We take a group of about 20 to 30 students out to there and let them listen to some of the leading minds in the conservative field.
You know, I'm sort of an old fogey, or at least I'm getting there, but I've noticed a lot of young faces at the summit here. Are you seeing that more and more at these other events as well?
Very much so. There seems to be a great rise in interest, more so recently, with the younger generation, and we are trying to get our members to go to participate in activities such as the summit. So it is picking up. It is definitely picking up.
What's your feeling about what you've seen at this particular summit?
I think there was a good turnout. I think it was very good messages. I would like to see the messages really take hold and gain some ground, especially with this 2016 presidential election. I think there's great potential, and I think we have some great minds leading into the future.
Well, these Republican debates have been getting record ratings on the air. Do you have, viewing parties out at UCF? Is there any kind of buzz going
Absolutely.
On out there?
Absolutely, yes, sir. Leading up to the debate, we're posting on social media, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, telling the students about that we will be holding watch parties. We usually work with the Republican Party of Florida or the Orange County Young Republicans or any group who will be hosting a watch party. We usually team up with them and go to the event with them and try to get the best turnout we can.
Now, does someone have to be a current student of UCF to be a part of the College Republicans, or can they be a recent alumni? Or
Absolutely.
Something?
Anybody. Would love to have anybody out, alumni, current students, or even future students anybody just come out to the meetings. We host in the student union every Tuesday from 7 to 8 in one of the ballrooms there that are provided by the campus.
Real quick, Matthew, what are you majoring in?
I have a dual major currently, and it's going to be in finance and economics.
Good. And, of course, you're concerned about the state of the economy when you get out.
Extremely so.
And I don't want you to necessarily commit to anyone, but do you have some favorite candidates? You don't have to name names, but you got to sort of solidify who you would support?
I do. With every speech, I'm getting closer and closer to making up my mind. For me, the most important thing is for the individuals to realize that the tax money is their money. It seems common sense, but it seems lost today that when the government collects tax from you by force, it is your money they are taking. And so when I look at the candidates, I look to see who still embodies that ideology instead of thinking that they are entitled to the tax.
Think that more millennials are looking at candidates from both parties with more of an open mind? They want to really understand what the candidate is all about and see that, a big smile and a pretty face may not be all that they want.
I would like to think that, but unfortunately there is Knights for Bernie Sanders group on campus, and when we go to consult them and talk with them about the issues, they just seem so instilled with their as it is, and they don't want to talk about the issues. They don't want to reason or logic or understand that there's no such thing as free. There's no such thing as your right to someone else's labor. And I think if we can get the students engaged to actually think about the issues like you're trying to say, we will make great headway.
That's why I talk oftentimes on the show. I liken politics, especially at the national level, to professional wrestling. And it's not to make fun of anybody. It's to explain phenomena like Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders has, in a number of people's minds, and a lot of young people, as a matter of fact, he has emblazoned that he is their champion. He will represent them. He will do their fighting for them. Once a person makes that connection, it's very difficult. Mm-hmm. No matter how much reason, logic, facts, everything you can pile on, once they've made that emotional connection, it's very difficult to break.
Very much.
And so do you see what you're up against sort of there?
We do. We try to reason with them.
But at the end of the day, reason may not be enough, I'm saying.
It may not be enough. Yeah. That's what I'm afraid of. So we try to catch them early. And we are doing our best right now, and I'd like to promote again, the CPAC travel scholarships. If you go on to gopucf.com, you can find all the contact information to donate and contribute and sponsor a student to go to CPAC. And by getting them involved and letting them go to all these speakers and these rallies to see what options are available, that's the best way to get a conservative individual to be conservative and think about the issues for the rest of their life rather than falling into the branding of Bernie Sanders.
Okay, so your Facebook site is GOPUCF.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're back. And the number to call if you want to win that 30-minute massage from Marilyn Monroe Spahn Oviedo is 407-774-8255. And the question was, name two of the goons. That's spelled G-O-O-N-S.
I'll give you a hint. Do-do-do-do.
That's a very good hit. Does your dog bat? That is not my duck.
Special delivery. It's a bam.
A bam?
And in Venezuela, they're doing things right. Yes, I'm friends of... What was that guy's name that died? What was his name? Shows you how much of an impact he's made on us, right?
No, we're just drawing blanks, that's all.
So there are some hints for you. Pink Panther?
Yes.
And that? So 407-774-8255, the goons. All right, just another quick little WTF news story here. Have you heard of sexism? Cissexism is spelled C-I-S-S-E-X-I-S-M. And cissexism is discrimination against transsexuals. And a famous transsexual blogger by the name of James St. James is offended by people assuming that your chromosomes, your DNA, can actually determine your gender.
Huh. Well, isn't that what science has told us?
No, that is sexism. And showing pictures of your non-transsexual children is also a form of cissexism, according to transgendered blogger James St. James.
That sounds more like a mental disorder.
I tap out, folks. Okay, I've heard it all.
No, we ain't. That's the scary part.
We're here to
I've
stay.
Just been put into the subcultural sharpshooter, and I can't take it anymore. It.
Just when you think you've heard it all, you ain't. And that's the scary part about it all.
Ying, dong, ying, dong, ying. Oh.
All right. Are you concerned about who the Postal Workers Union is backing in the election coming up?
No.
Well, in that case, I won't tell you that it's Bernie Sanders. It's like, who cares, right?
Exactly. It's a union. What the union always vote?
Yeah, so that means, you know,
independent?
If he gets elected, you'll go into the post office and they'll go, you didn't get your mail because of climate change. It's climate change's problem why you didn't get your mail on time.
And we demand a minimum wage of $15 an hour.
And speaking of that, Marty O'Malley.
Yes.
You know, Marty O'Malley was...
Well, Martin. Yeah, well, he was going to pop up.
At the debate last night. Now, earlier, I sort of threw him a little bit of, I don't know if you want to call it love, but I said it, at least he understands that when it comes to the problem with the situation with the Islamic State and all that, we got to take the lead. We can't. And he kind of stole a line from Jeb Bush, which others also did, I noticed, at the summit when he said, we don't have to be the world's policeman, but we do have to be the world's leader, I think is how he phrased it. Well, anyway, Martin O'Malley, of course, has been a huge critic of all things conservative. But he says that that we have that the illegal immigration into this country is greatly, I'm paraphrasing, greatly overblown. And in fact, if we really want to improve the economy and be able to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour, we have to bring the illegals who are here out of the shadows, so to speak, into the mainstream economy. And there will be so much money there, even though the problem has been overblown, there will somehow be so much money there that it will now be able to somehow justify a $15 an hour minimum wage.
Well, the transportation companies would really expand and grow their business if the illegals came out of the shadows.
But see,
because then we could round them up and deport all of them.
But see, this also betrays the fact that liberals don't seem to be able to understand basic economics. Because if you, in essence, put more people into the workforce, you actually put downward pressure on wages, not upward pressure on wages. You see, if you actually want to put upward pressure on wages, you would round up the illegals and send them out of the country. Now, if only someone would come along with a plan to do that. If only someone would come along with a plan to do that.
I wonder who would do that.
Only someone with a pair even bigger than Maggie Thatcher's.
Well, that's cruising for a bruising.
Indeed it is. Indeed it is. All right. And the 6,000 prisoners were released from the federal prison system, the largest single prisoner release.
Was it 6,000 or 60,000?
It was six.
Okay.
But I'm sure it's just going to be the start. And not that they're, I mean, we do, I must say this, we do have a problem with way too many people in prison. There's no question in my mind about it. But to just sort of come through fell swoop like that, more or less, without much review and release 6,000, I don't know if that's the greatest way to go about it. But nonetheless, we do have far too many people in prison. But a lot of them belong there, and they need to stay there. Well, and so that's why something like this should be troubling. And by the way, at least a third of these were in the country illegally.
Illegally. Well, you know, here's an interesting question. They want to do away with that box on the application with regards to whether you have
ever
committed
a felony.
And they want to actually stop you from asking that.
Right.
So does that mean child molesters can now be hired as nannies and servants in the wealthy people's homes?
Well, here's the good news.
Or as teachers.
The good news is, legally speaking, no, that would not mean that. The bad news is there would be no way for the employer to know.
Well, exactly.
So even though it would be against the law for the molester to do that, he could potentially get away with it for a long time before ever being caught.
Well, why would it be against the law now? Because you're not allowed to discriminate against people that have committed crimes.
Part of their sentencing is to stay away from those things. What I'm saying is the law against them stays true. The problem is it is now much more difficult to catch them breaking the law.
All right. Then what about a convicted bank robber now being put in charge of cash collection?
Same thing.
They don't have to volunteer that they're bank robbers.
Right. And so it would be more difficult for the employer to know that they are. And so we would be on the honor system with criminals, is what would it would amount to.
Let me see. Criminals,
how about that?
Break the law, honor system.
And by the way, there are ways to, so one can clean up their record so that if they really want to do that, it can be done without having to change the whole makeup of essence our society. All right, that's going to about wrap it up for tonight. We're going to leave you once again with a Lloyd Marcus tune. You know, gift giving season is coming up, and Lloyd Marcus has got some great CD, God, Country, and Love, makes a great gift. Of course, My Liberty Threads, MyLibertyThreads.com, LloydMarcus.com. Those are great places to get gifts for the holidays. And don't forget, Cafe Positano is a great place to spend some of your holiday with that special person, or if you want to throw a party for your business, your office, or your family. You can do it there. And we'll be there tomorrow night. Right, Aubrey?
We're doing our best. No one got the answer.
Oh, that's right. Do you want to give it to them, or do you want to continue this tomorrow?
No. We give it to them tonight. The three people that made up the Goons, Spike Milligan, Harry Belafonte, and Peter Sellers. And go YouTube the Ying Tong song.
And this is Brand New with Lloyd Marcus. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
I was walking around with my head on the ground, wondering what to do. So lost in my sin, no peace from within, just trying to make it through. I've tried Buddha and TM and Elijah Muhammad too. But when I passed a church and heard the children sing, it cut my heart in two. They sang, if any man be in Christ, he is a new creature. Old things are passed away. Church, right up to the front, I said, preacher, is it true? Tell me, who is this Christ? I must meet him now. Maybe he can tell me what to do. Or maybe my life is too tarnished. Maybe I've done too much wrong. But he looked at me with a gentle smile, and he sang the same sweet song. He said, if any man be in Christ's Son, he is a new creature. Old things are passed away.
please make my life brand new. Lord, if you're really real, then give me something I can feel, and I'll tell the world about you. Suddenly, something happened, and now I know it's true. First he touched my heart, then he touched my soul, and he sent me with this message for you, all of you. Yeah.